Eagle's Nest. We have a fantastic jam-packed show for you today. We thank all of our listeners who are listening in from all around the world. You can catch us on WOLB 1010 AM, also on WOLBBaltimore.com. We are streaming live and also on the WOLB 1010 app. As I said, we have an exciting show today. As we do with every show, we dedicate this show to the honor of my late great father, Arnold M. Jolivet, and we know that he is definitely shining. Look upon us as we're here on these airwaves. It is a beautiful sunny day here in Baltimore, Maryland, and we're just thankful for another day to be in the land of living. We have a great show in studio. I'd like to first welcome, I'm honored to have in studio live, Troy Barnett. And Troy is a former NFL defensive end, defensive lineman, both with the New England Patriots and the Washington Redskins, and also is an executive with Under Armour as well. So we welcome you to the show, Mr. Barnett. Welcome to the Eagle's Nest.
Glad to be here. Very excited about this opportunity.
Awesome, awesome. Well, Troy's actually going to be co-hosting the show for me today because we have so much that we want to get into and so much that we want to talk about and share with you, the listeners, today that we're going to have Troy sit in for the entire show to co-host with us. We actually have another guest that is calling in. Actually, I believe she's on the line now. She's always very timely, so I want to make sure that I bring her on correctly and give her her just due and go over just some of the resumes. She has so many accomplishments and so many things that she's been able to achieve in her short time on this earth. But I want to make sure that we share with you just a little bit about her life, and that is General Clara Adams Ender. General Clara Adams Ender, just like yourself, Troy, is a native of North Carolina. She was actually born in Wake County, North Carolina. She's the fourth oldest of 10 children, so she comes from a small family, you know. She received a bachelor degree in nursing from North Carolina A&T State University. I'm not going to hold that against her with that Aggie pride, being a Howardite. And she also received a Master of Science degree in nursing from the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis, and a Master of Military Art and Science degree from the Command and General Staff College in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. She's been awarded 12 honorary doctorate degrees in law, public service, humane letters, and science. So just to share a little bit about General Adams' rise to the top, she rose from a staff nurse in the Army Nurse Corps to become the chief executive officer for 22,000 nurses. Let me repeat that again, 22,000 nurses, a brigadier general, and a director of personnel of the Army, Surgeon General. She was vice president for nursing at the prestigious Walter Reed Army Medical Center, the largest healthcare facility in the Department of Defense. In 1967, she became the first female in the Army to be awarded the Expert Field Medical Badge. So General Adams Ender also commanded an Army base, a position equivalent to what they consider to be a city manager, magistrate, or mayor of a city. She was actually responsible for a $90 million budget while also providing quality customer service to 85 different constituent groups. So she has a vast experience in knowledge and leadership. And we know, we always say here on the Eagle's Nest, that everything rises and falls with leadership. But now General Adams Ender is the president and chief executive officer of Caring About People with Enthusiasm, what they call CAPE. CAPE Associates is a management consulting and inspirational speaking firm. So we are excited to have you on the line, General Adams Ender. I just wanted to let our listeners know who was going to be talking to him today. So I just had to give just some of the resume before we actually brought him to you onto the line. How are you today? All right, let's see if we have General Adams Ender. General Adams Ender, can you hear me? All right, let's see. We have her on the line right now. General Adams Ender?
Yes.
All right, we got you loud and clear. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, fantastic. I just wanted to give our listeners, as I said, a chance to know just a little bit about you. I've had a chance, and I actually have it sitting right here, right in front of me, your book, My Rise to the Stars. So I'm getting into that book. But I wanted to let our listeners know a little bit about you and have you come on and just share with our listeners just a little bit about your story, you know, and getting a chance to watch you from afar and hear from my mother, some of the great things that you accomplished and all the leadership that you have been able to instill, not just in those who were directly under your watch, but also those who had to really watch your life and what you've been able to do. But just share with us a little bit about how everything got started in Wayne County. You know, we talked about being from a big family and all the things that go along with that. But what made you go into that direction or get started to even pursue a career in the military? Was that something that you always wanted to do?
No, Arnold. I will tell you, when I went off to college, that was the farthest thing from my mind. But when I was growing up in North Carolina, in Wake County, I was born in Wake County, a little town called Willow Springs, in Wake County, North Carolina, not too far from the capital of North Carolina, Raleigh. And my mother and father, who I have learned later were my first mentors, and they were not well-educated people. My dad graduated from third grade and had to go to work, and my mom graduated from sixth grade and had to go to work. So they were not well-educated, but they valued education. And they always told us that three things. One, you are somebody, and don't hang around with people who tell you that you're not. Two, you can do and be anything that you want to be if you're willing to work hard and never give up. And we just never forgot those two things, and we just kind of always worked in that direction. But I can tell you that any time one works on a tobacco farm for any period of time, you learn very quickly that you need to find another line of work. I did, because those hot days in the tobacco fields was not what I thought I wanted to do with the rest of my life. So I went off to college, and from there I got into the Army because the Army had money to educate people, and the Army still has money to educate people and still does that on a regular basis. And so they were giving out at that time scholarships to nurses because they had a shortage, and I saw that sign and went in to talk to the young lady that was there. And she talked about the fact that I had an obligation of 3 years. And I said, well, ma'am, when you're 19, you can do most anything. And so I went off and went with the full intention of staying 3 years and doing my time and being done. And 34 years later, I left.
Wow, 34.
And I tell youngsters today, don't burn bridges because you never know where you're going to be and when.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, during that time when you came into the military, being African American and being a female, what were some of the challenges that you had to go through? What were some of the things were you readily accepted into the ranks of the other people in the military? Were there any challenges or things that you had to go through? Was there any other time that you said, "Well, hey, maybe this isn't for me"?
Well, I have told people many times, if you're in the Army just like any other job and you could get out today, that is when you're not feeling well about what's going on with you, you do it. But then most of the time in the military, you got an obligation, so you got some time to think about it, which is good. I will tell you that being black and being female in the Army were both challenges at that time. And the problem more than anything else is with the numbers. We didn't have enough people around to be able to make the stand that we do make today, but you still have challenges no matter what goes on. But, you know, I decided, and I will just say, by the way, because I've said this before and people have challenged me on it, my challenges for being a woman were far greater than my challenges of being black. I can tell you that up front. Because whenever you are female, everybody can discriminate against you and do. And so as a result, you got a double challenge there. But either way, with that, I had to make a decision very quickly. And I made a decision very quickly that whatever people held against me because of my race or because of my gender was their problem. It was not mine because I was somebody who was going someplace. Remember, I learned that from when I was a child. And I was going someplace, and I was not about to let those things, which I can do nothing about, stop me.
Well, talk a little bit about that, because in your book, in Chapter 5, when you talk about loving the skin I'm in, and, you know, that really transcends whether you're in the military or whether you're, you know, working in corporate America, whether you're in college, and when you really have to love who you are, because, you know, that's one thing you can't run from the inside of yourself. So talk a little bit about that. I know you get in a little more depth about that in your book in chapter 5. But what did all that mean to you when you talk about loving the skin that you're in?
Well, the thing that I was talking about at that time was first going to my mother to discuss what I saw happening to me when I was in high school, and which I have been challenged on many times, which I called black-on-black bigotry. Mm. You know, we had this whole business of skin color and differences in skin color. When I was growing up, was that if you were black, you got to stay back, and if you had some color, you could go ahead and move ahead. And I noticed that much in class. You know, I'd have the answer and I'd have my hand up, but I didn't seem to get called upon as much as those folks with fairer skin. And so I came home one day quite frustrated about that, and my mother said, "Listen, don't let the color of your skin stop you from doing or being anything. You're my child, and I love you, and that's all you need to know about dealing with that. You go out there, and you get that information in your head, and you keep raising your hand," she said, "and somebody will pay you attention whenever the time comes." And so I just kept on doing it. You know, I just kept on having to be forward, and you have to be able to love yourself first before you can even think about loving or dealing with anybody else. And I learned that quickly, and I dealt with that very well.
Well, again, we're here live on the Eagle's Nest. I'm Arnold Jolivet II, live in studio with Troy Barnett, and we are speaking with General Adams Ender, General Clara Adams Ender. We're talking a little bit about her life. We're also going to talk about her book as well. So General Adams Ender, in looking at that, and what would you attribute? I know there may not be one thing in particular, but what would you attribute to the way that you were able to handle adversity and the obstacles that you faced from the moment that you signed your name on the dotted line to enroll in the Army to the day that your retirement papers were complete? What was it? Because we have some people that are listening right now who are on the fence, who may have a dream, they may have a goal, but they don't know really how to pursue it, or they might not have the motivation to get up off the couch to go out and make it happen. So what was the thing that allowed you to keep pushing forward? I hear and I read about the influence of your parents and not wanting to go to the, you know, be on Tobacco Road, you know. So just tell me a little bit about what was that motivation that kept you going when there were days when I'm sure you didn't feel like it.
Well, the motivation, I suppose, kind of stemmed from that still small voice from my parents that said, "Never give up. Right around the corner may be the opportunity if you just don't give up." Now, I will admit that some days I was awfully tired, and I had to learn how to go home and get a good night's sleep. That may be the thing that's necessary at some point. Just get a good night's sleep and wake up, and things will look different tomorrow. And most of the time, they look better than they did when you left them, when you were tired. And so I just maintained that whole idea of the fact that I couldn't give up, and so I just had to keep on pushing forward to do what I wanted to do. The second thing is, and I talk to people about looking at obstacles very often, because, you know, we there are a couple of ways you can look at obstacles. One of them is you can look at an obstacle that is something that you think is trying to stop you. You can look at it and consider that it's something that's trying to stop you, and that is put up deliberately to try and stop you. And that is a way to look at it. However, another way to look at an obstacle is not something to stop you, but something that you can go over, under, around, or through to get to the objective that you want to accomplish. And I just tried to figure out a way. And after a while, it got to be downright fun. I mean, really and truly, I said, "Oh, I can handle that. Now, what did I do the last time?" And just build on those experiences, because every time you overcome an obstacle, you have also taken advantage of another opportunity.
Wow, that is so true. Now, in looking at, you know, your experience, and I gave some information about the Army base that you were the commander of and your leadership, What would you say is your leadership style? You know, we talk about everything rises and falls with leadership, and leadership begins at the top and trickles all the way down. But in being over a $90 million budget, or being in charge of 22,000 people, or even if it's 5 people or 100 people, what would you suggest to those who find themselves in leadership positions now and have that type of responsibility? What is the best style or approach to leadership that was most effective for you in your rise to becoming a general in the armed forces?
Well, I will tell you, Arnold, probably one of the things that I learned along the way and that I learned how to deal with more than anything else is to know that the person with whom I was going to have the most difficulty, I looked at in the mirror every day. Mm. And that was me. If you can learn how to manage yourself and manage the things that is necessary for you to do in order to be able to be successful in this life, you can manage other people. But you have to every day work at that management of you. When you get ready to deal with the other people that you have to deal with, whether you got 5 or 5,000, it is very important to be able to define your expectations. Tell the people what you expect of them. Make it very clear and tell them what you are trying to accomplish. If you can do those two things very well, people will help you, and they will help you with, and also get out of the way and let them do it in their own way instead of trying to make them do it your way, because they can't do it your way. They've got to do it their way. And if it accomplishes the same thing, what difference does it make? Because what you want is the results more than anything else. And I found that that was very helpful to me, and that people buy in to what the objective is whenever they know what you're trying to accomplish.
Well, again, we're here with General Clara Adams Ender, live on the Eagle's Nest, WOLB 1010 AM. You can also listen online at WOLBBaltimore.com. We also have Troy Barnett that is in studio as well. General Adams Ender, I have a guest co-host today, Mr. Troy Barnett, who is also from North Carolina as well. So I wanted you just to get a chance to say the hello to Troy as well. He's sitting here shaking his head, nodding his head as you speak and as you say, you know, all the things that you're espousing to be so true, because again, the leadership qualities that you're talking about and being able to manage yourself, it does not discriminate. It grows across all the borders, all the barriers. Doesn't matter if you're white, black. It doesn't matter what you are or where you are. All those things, ring true. And I was looking at your book, and I was reading your book, and it's so much great information in here where you kind of took all the years, all the knowledge, and bundled it up in one pretty package. But what was the motivation for you? Because so many people go through life and they're never able to put their story on paper, or nobody ever gets a chance to hear it. What was it in you that made you decide to go ahead and write the book and tell your story?
I can tell you unequivocally, it was because of young people. Whenever I got to be a general in the Army, of course, and everybody saw me in uniform, and they would be marveling at the fact, oh, there's a female general. I have heard youngsters say, or they have come up to me and said, well, it's easy for you to get to be a general, especially when you were already born with a silver spoon in your mouth. Mm. And I said, what? And I said, what is this? So they said, well, your father and mother must have been rich in order for you to be able to get to this point. And then I would just tell them a little bit about where I came from, because I have never forgotten those tobacco fields, you know, and the motivation for me getting away from there. And as a matter of fact, I went back and bought the farm. And that's what's financing my old age today.
Wow.
Anyway.
I love it.
I talked to these youngsters, and I said, you know, I need to reach more of these youngsters, because they really don't understand that wherever it is that you are in this life, you got to learn how to take lemons and make lemonade. I mean, it doesn't matter where you are and what you're doing. And I've read stories, and I could tell you about stories of people who were born with those silver spoons in their mouths and still had to struggle in order to be able to make it. So it does indeed happen. And I just tell them till today that you that I thought it was important to write that book so that I could say, listen, I came from very humble beginnings in this life, but thank goodness to my pushing on and the help from my higher power, I am not what I was.
Wow. Again, we are here live with General Clara Adams Ender, live on the Eagle's Nest, WOLB 1010 AM and WOLBBaltimore.com. Our call-in number is 410-481-1010. That's 410-481-1010. And I'm looking here, General Adams Ender, in your book, and you talk about Clara's aphorisms, and you have 15 different aphorisms that you have here that are listed, and some of them are absolutely incredible. And I'm going to just go over a couple of them. I just want you to be able to expound on them as well. You already covered one where you talked about the purpose of your book, where you talk about always encourage others, especially youngsters. But one thing that I wanted you to talk about briefly is taking action will cure most fears. When you say taking action will cure most fears, what does that mean to you?
What I was talking about primarily in that case was most of the time, and we just saw it in an election that went by, is that people have a fear of the unknown. They fear those things that might happen to them, and they fear, which I call illusory fear. It may happen, but it may not. But they still have those fears. If you don't do anything, you'll be paralyzed by that fear, and you will never know what might have happened had you done something. So whenever you feel that fear taking over, getting the best of you, you just get out and do something or move in the direction of that fear and see what it is that you can do in order to change the situation. And I have found that to be very helpful for me in many situations. Sometimes the fear will get worse, but it will get infinitely better once you have accomplished what you set out to accomplish. And you'll get there if you still take action.
Absolutely.
General, this is Troy. I'm a military brat. My father spent How are you? My father spent 22 years in the military. We grew up in Onslow County. By Camp Lejeune, and you are truly.
Oh yeah, sounds like a Marine.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. You are truly an inspiration to all, but especially for African American young girls who are going into fields that predominantly they have a hard time in. I have a daughter who's attending Morgan State University, and she's going into engineering. What advice would you give women who are going into those fields that they're going to face? The fact they're going to face issues because, as you stated earlier, that they're women, but now they're being also going to face fears because they're African American situations because they're African American. What kind of advice would you give them to help them navigate those obstacles that they're going to face by going in those professions that predominantly we're not in?
Yeah, well, I would say that the first thing that's important, Troy, for her and anyone else is to be very precise about what it is that you want to do. If you've decided that this is what you want to do and be, then you got to move in that direction, no matter what it is that goes on. And understand that obstacles may come, but you need to make sure that you are well-grounded in what it is that you want to be about and well-grounded in who you are, so that you can meet those obstacles when they come. And also learn to determine quickly what is your problem and what isn't. That whole situation of people having bias against you because you're a female or because you are of a particular skin color are things that you can do nothing about. And so they are not your problem. So if that is someone else's problem, you could say, I'm sorry you feel that way, but, you know, I don't really feel that way about me. I think that I can manage over here in these sciences, and I can manage to do what is necessary, and the rest of it is I'll show you and not even address it again.
Wow.
Because it is not necessary to be addressed by you and making it a burden for you when it is not your problem.
Right.
Matter of fact, I think I got some real advantages over here because of the color of my skin. I don't get sunburned and skin cancer. but there are a number of other things. And being a female, oh, my Lord, that is probably one of the greatest things that ever happened to me. It was that I was born female because I have I've learned a lot about men and living and things that go on as far as their lives are concerned, and I think I'm better off exactly where I am. So I'm proud to be this that I am over here. And tell them always don't ever try to be something that you're not, because I've seen women try and go that route, and that still doesn't get you in. So you might as well spend as much time as you can being yourself and doing those things that you want to do in order to make your life what you want it to be. And just tell them, don't give up. Some days it may look like you ought to, but go get a good night's sleep and come back tomorrow. It'll work.
Well, General Adams, and that brings me to chapter 18 of your book. We talk about crashing the fraternity. You know, you talk about the emotional peaks and valleys.
Yes.
Once you were actually selected to head up the Army Nurse Corps and when that announcement was actually made. So talk about that and what that actually meant once that announcement was made, once that reality hit you. I know you had, you know, as they say, I know you had some haters along the way, but sometimes your haters can be the best motivation for you. But talk about those emotional peaks and valleys once you were actually selected to head up the Army Nurse Corps.
Well, let me tell you, that whole business of crashing the fraternity and what that was about. Getting to be chief of the Army Nurse Corps, of course, primarily is that area over there of dealing with a female kind of thing, in that most of our generals who have made, those who have made generals and chief of the Nurse Corps have been women. However, when you talk about getting to be a general officer in the Army, you talk about a man's world, and that's why I called it a fraternity, because it still is a fraternity. And the time when I was on active duty and was a general, there were four female generals in the United States Army. There were 410 general officers. You see what I mean?
Wow.
And so you have to know that if you manage to get in the door, it does not matter what level you are, and they've got 1, 2, 3, and 4 stars. It doesn't matter what level you are. When you're in the fraternity, you're in. All right? Because this is what guy said to me whenever I went to my first party after I had a reception or something we were having after I had been promoted. And he said, Clara, he said, come on in here. He said, because we have spent so much time trying to keep you out. Until since you made it, we got to welcome you. And I said, and he said, as a matter of fact, you can stand here, you don't have to say a word. Well, how on earth was I going to be able to stay over there after I spent all that time getting there? You know I got to say a thing.
You got to say something, right?
So I just spent all my time doing that. but it's one of those situations of if you're able to get yourself, if you're lucky enough to get to be a part of the fraternity, you are indeed in, and you have certain expectations that you have to make, but you can manage those because you belong to that fraternity.
Wow. Well, General Adams, and I see we have a caller online, too. So let me just take this caller real quick, and you are in line with General Adams Ender. Hold on 1 second. Caller line 2, you're on the Eagle's Nest.
General Adams Ender.
She can hear you. General Adams Ender?
Yes.
Okay, we got disconnected. But hopefully they'll call back in into line 2 so we can go ahead and get them back on. But talk
about like somebody who knew me.
Okay, so we got you locked in. So call on back in to the Eagle's Nest, 410-481-1010. But talking about that in the transition, after the retirement took place, after the reality set in, you know, that first morning where you didn't have anywhere to be at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, after so many years of working at it, so many years of leading, what was that like for you?
Listen, you're talking about retirement, huh?
Yes.
AJ, that took a lot of doing. I will tell you, it is different. It is a different kind of world. And as a matter of fact, for about 2 years after I was retired, I was still looking around waiting for somebody to tell me that I had orders to go to someplace, you know, and maybe it was someplace that I didn't want to go.
Right.
But after a while, you learn to settle down. And right now, I've been almost 22 years retired. And so I'm pretty well settled into it now. The other thing is that you spend so much time when you're on active duty volunteering for people around your community. You see, because of tax laws and things of that nature, we are always on duty as soldiers, and so we don't have any time. Also, when you do things for people, you do that kind of gratis, you see. Right. And all of these people remembered when I used to do things for them for free.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got out and started a business and I told them I was going to have to charge them, they said, yeah, but you used to do that for free. And I said, well, that was then, and this is now.
It's a new day.
It's a new day.
Absolutely.
And I have to have work. I mean, you know, and for my work, I have to be paid.
That's right. That's right. Know? That's right. So let me go back to line two again.
We went through a number of things, but it all worked out very, very well.
Awesome. Yeah. Let me go back to line two. Back on the line, we have, is this Colonel Joanne on the line? All right, welcome back to the Eagle's Nest. You're on with General Adams Ender.
That sounded like somebody I knew.
I just want to say that you have been a wonderful friend and mentor. And, you know, besides being chief of the Army Nurse Corps, you were the deputy commander for the Military District of Washington. And I appreciate you, Walter Reed. But one thing I always remember that you always told us when you got us in a meeting, I want to deal with what is and not what ought to be. And that's something that I've always remembered.
Deal with what is and not what ought to be. That's powerful.
That's right.
That is powerful. We thank you for.
And I still hear people to today saying, Colonel Joanne, should, would, could. No. What is? That's the one thing that you got to take care of, even though you can pontificate about what should have been and what should have happened. It still is not what is. And the reality is always important to deal with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you calling in, Colonel Joanne, to the show. And is there anything else you want to say to General Adams Ender?
Just thank you. Thank you for being such a wonderful mentor to so many.
Yes, and thank you for being a great Army nurse. You are wonderful.
Okay, talk to you.
Absolutely, absolutely. What we want to do, tell us a little bit about CAPE now. We know you're transitioning and you have your business. You talked about your business. So what are you doing with CAPE?
Well, I will tell you what's happening with CAPE. CAPE Associates was a management consulting firm that I ran for 15 years after I was out of the Army. I don't run that firm anymore. I closed it because I decided that I didn't need to work for money anymore. And so I started a nonprofit, and the name of that nonprofit is CAPE Legacy Fund, Caring About People with Enthusiasm Legacy Fund. I learned, and I hear a lot of people talking about it these days, and we're going to have to fix that issue of kids and scholarships and debt whenever they get, and loans and debt whenever they get come out of college. I did not realize that it had gotten to the extent that it is, but I heard the other day that the average student leaves college with $60,000 of debt. Absolutely unconscionable. But there is a group of students who go to college and who are smarter than I would ever have been, but they are going and struggling and trying to pay their way as they go through college. And I just think that that is just marvelous for them. So if they are in college and they work for a semester and they have within $1,000 of their full semester amount that they need for the semester, we'll give them that $1,000 so that they can stay in school. Because the statistics show that if they're able to stay in schools consistently, they can indeed graduate without difficulty. So that we try and keep these youngsters in school, and I have about 7 or 8 youngsters in colleges and universities right now, and I partner with some other students who are in other that are being carried in other areas here in Washington, D.C., and some places across the country, and help them with those students who have sometimes emergencies that come up. And I will tell you, these students are students of modest or no means. You know, they don't have a lot of extra money. And I will tell you, when you're poor, you're just poor. I mean, but when you get money, and we're taught never to give the money, that because they deal with the crisis that's at hand rather than dealing with the crisis that they may need to deal with. So colleges and universities across this country have many, many creative ways of you being able to give monies to students, and we do that to help youngsters out to try and keep them in school. Because education is still the best way to prosperity and success in this country.
All right. Well, General Adams, in there, before we let you go, we have one more caller. Let me just reach out here and grab Maggie on line 3. Maggie, welcome to the Eagle's Nest. You're on with General Adams, in there.
Thank you. Peace and blessings to both of you. And I've really, really enjoyed the interview. The voice sounds so familiar to me that it makes me think of Dr. Ann Emery here in Baltimore. I don't know if you've ever met her, General. Let me see. Let me get your name right. General Adams Enders.
Uh-huh. That's correct.
And I've never heard that last name before, Enders.
Yep, General Adams Ender. So, well, we appreciate you calling in, Maggie. Did you have a question for the general?
I have a question.
Okay.
I have a question. Well, one of my questions is, because I have two. I guess one is a question, the other one a statement. What was your service time, the years you were in service?
I was in service from 1959 to 1993.
1959 to, what was that?
93.
93. Okay, and the other one is, I was so surprised to hear you say how hard it is for a woman to be accepted or respected in the military, because if it wasn't for a woman, Florence Nightingale, so many of them, by thousands, maybe millions, would have died from the lack of cleanliness.
Yeah, well, that's quite true. However, that does not necessarily change one's attitude because one is helpful.
I do understand, and that's why we all have knowledge, a real solid body of knowledge, and I think you are encouraging that.
All right, Maggie, well, we appreciate your call.
Thank you, Maggie.
Listening. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, General Adams Ender, we thank you so much for coming on to the show. I thank you for your example. Thank you for your leadership. Just like Troy, I have a daughter who's 9 years old, and I thank you that I can point to her, as well as so many others, as great examples of what you can actually overcome and become. Not just my daughter, but my son as well. It doesn't matter, boy or girl.
Yes,
and so I just thank you again for your leadership. I welcome you to come on the show at any time. I recommend everyone to go out and get your book, My Rise to the Stars.
Tell them how to get it. I have a website, www.claracares.com. claracares.com.
www.claracares.com. So
that's right.
Okay.
They can order it there.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate your time, and I look forward to talking to you real soon.
All right. Thank you much.
Hey, and I'll leave you with this. Proud to care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, Troy, there you have it, man. I mean, you know, what else is there to say? We had the general on the line again. Your home girl, so to speak, from North Carolina.
That's right.
And, you know, I guess you and I, we were kind of on the same page, just kind of nodding our head the whole time as General Adams Ender was talking. And, you know, that really gives us a transition over to you. And for me to let, you know, our listeners know a little bit about you, you being from Jacksonville, North Carolina, and really growing up there in Jacksonville and moving on to attend University of North Carolina and actually walking on to the football team. And, you know, I, too, was a walk-on, so I know how that is when you walk on and then able to achieve a scholarship for football and then moving on to the NFL to play for the Patriots as well as the Washington Redskins. Mm-hmm. But more importantly than that is really the life lessons, you know, that you learned. She talked about the silver spoon in your mouth, and when you are a walk-on, you don't have that silver spoon. You know, you have the scholarship athletes, and they get the things that they get as a scholarship athlete, and you kind of go about your business, and you keep it moving. So, you know, after and not only with the NFL, but also your transition over to corporate America, working for Reebok, as well as now in your position as an executive with Under Armour, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, going back to when you were growing up and what you looked for. Was it the goal to be in the NFL? Was it the goal to, you know, reach a certain heights or the peak of your industry in corporate America? What were some of the things that you were thinking about, you know, as a youngster that kept you and motivated you to be able to move forward?
I think right along the lines of what the general talked about is when you grow up in a small area, one of the things you tell yourself when you leave is that when I come back, I'm coming back because I'm coming to visit. I'm not coming back to stay. And I wanted to make sure that my career was going to allow me to do that. And I had wonderful parents who really preached education to us. My parents weren't college graduates, but they instilled in us and it made it made sure that we had the opportunity to go to college. And so it was that always being told at a young age, you will go to college, you will go to college, you will go to college. And so for me, it was always a drive, and always my mother always would instill in me that you got to have a plan A, a plan B, and possibly a C. And so for me, it was getting my education was primarily my goal. Athletics was something that I just loved to do. I've been playing sports since I was 7. But I knew the statistics. I knew, not very many people get a chance to play in the NFL. And so even when I graduated college, my primary responsibility was focus was to go into the Secret Service. So I had some interviews in Charlotte, North Carolina before doing my senior year. But it worked out. There were Parcells called and said, we'd love to have you come in as a free agent. And I said, well, who gets a chance to play with Parcells? Not everybody gets a chance to have that opportunity. So right. I went, and they released a 10-year veteran and a third-round draft pick to keep me, and had some success there. And I've always been just a driven person.
Talk about that for a minute. You know, coming out of the University of North Carolina and earning a scholarship, becoming a scholarship athlete, but when you walk into that locker room, for the first time, and you see, was Drew Bledsoe there at the time?
Yes.
Okay. When you walk into the locker room, you see a Drew Bledsoe. You see, you know, all pros on both ends, offense and defense. And you're coming in as a free agent, you know, just excited to be there. What was that experience like, that first day that you came in as a rookie, starting all over again in that aspect? What was that like?
It was actually pretty funny because they made sure that you knew you were a rookie. Mm-hmm. Most of the players had their numbers corresponded with their lockers, but when you're a free agent, your locker number may be number 123. So you could mm-hmm. be you're definitely segregated from that perspective. But the experience was awesome, and they helped you as much as they could. They knew it was a competition because you're there really to take somebody's job. Mm-hmm. And so they helped you along the way, but it was really the individual really had to come in and make a mark, and you had to make it quickly in order to even just get playing time.
Right. And moving forward with the NFL, we understand that the average – lifespan or career span for typical NFL players is what, 3 years, 4 years?
3 years. The average player is 85% of all NFL athletes are done in less than 5 years. Mm-hmm. Less than 1% get a chance to play more than 15 years. So it's a very small group. So you're talking about a million athletes in high school get a chance to go play college, that want to go play college ball. 130,000 get a chance to play. Of that 130,000, you got about 3,000 that get a chance to play in the NFL. So it's 0.01% get a chance to play in the NFL. So it's a very small percentage. But what people really don't understand is that NFL players, their contracts are not guaranteed. So no matter what they sign you for, if they choose to release you, you don't get anything. And so it's not like the Major League Baseball or NHL or basketball, you have to start all over. And so when you come in knowing that going in, and you see the lifespan, you see the trajectory that you're on average what you're going to have, you definitely have to have something planned for it, and you have to be prepared for it because it is a business. And so for me, it was, even while I was there, finding ways to prepare for that second step.
Wow. Well, we're here live on the Eagles Nest, WOLB 1010, and also streaming live on WOLBBaltimore.com and the WOLB 1010 app. We are here live in studio with Troy Barnett, and he's sharing with us a little bit about his experience in the NFL, and we're going to be talking about corporate America and that transition. So going back to that, Troy, when you talk about not having the $10 million, $15 million signing bonus, because a lot of people, they see these numbers that are thrown around in the NFL, $50 million over 10 years, $100 million over, you know, only thing you can really count is what's guaranteed to you, right? But not having that as a free agent, you know, your free agent bonus may have been a, you know, three-piece chicken with biscuit, you know? But not having that, what is the mindset in knowing that, you know, somebody roll up on the back of your leg, a torn ACL or whatever, it could be over just as quickly as you got the phone call, it could be over with. So what was your mindset in preparing? You talked about the plan A, B, and C, but what was your mindset every day that, hey, this might not last forever?
And I was very fortunate. Andre Tippett, who's still in New England right now and was elected to Hall of Fame a couple of years back, was a great mentor to me. And one of the things that he stressed to us as players is that we needed to do internships while we were playing, because we had the platform. We had the opportunity that most people didn't get a chance, would never have, when it comes to getting access to senior level leadership in some of the Fortune 500 companies. And so he stressed to us that, you know, in the summer that you should make sure you do an internship. So he was the one that really kind of pushed me and others to really take advantage of that. And so for me, it was, you know, after I made the team that first year and was preparing for what to do in the summertime, where a lot of guys were, you know, taking vacations or playing video games, I would go and work at Reebok every summer and really started to hone my corporate America skills and get the experience that I have today. And that's where I fell in love with technology, was doing an internship.
Wow. And I just want to mention, for Under Armour, your position is Director of Corporate Services, Technology and Analytics, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So in Reebok, having that platform being so important that you have a platform where, you know, you are very visible, how were you received once you actually did your internship? I understand it was for a short period of time, but were you welcome because you were an NFL athlete, or did people say, oh, well, you know, this guy's already got a job, he's coming trying to take mine?
Well, it was a little bit of both, because a lot of times when you go into a corporate America position as an intern and coming from the league, people are wondering, what are you going to bring to the table? They're not concerned about how you played or where you played. It's what are you going to bring to the company to make this company better? Mm-hmm. And so when I went into the internship program, my idea was to really take some of the skills I learned as an athlete and apply that to corporate America, you know, willing to working to be the best, being able to persevere, going that extra mile, being accountable. So I brought those things into the internship program to where they saw that I wasn't just there to shake hands and kiss babies, so to speak, but I came to help as much as possible, as well as to learn. And when I came in with that mentality, the doors just flew open. I mean, I got a chance to meet all the senior level leadership. They were willing to have lunch with me and really give me advice, and really became great mentors to me. And so it was a great experience. It's one of those experiences that I continue to work with players from the Ravens to make sure they get access to some of the internship programs that Under Armour offers. As well as players from around the league that I you know, constantly stay in contact with and try to be mentors to them, because it's such a great opportunity. And when you have such a visible lifestyle as an NFL athlete and you have this platform, you got to use it as much as possible because you have a short span to take advantage of it.
Are players today taking advantage of the resources that are available to them? Current active players, are they taking advantage of those resources that, from your perspective, or are a lot of them naive to think that, hey, this money's going to always keep flowing the way it is?
Unfortunately, AJ, many people are feeling like they're going to play forever, and they're not taking advantage of the opportunities that are presented to them by the NFL or by the Players Association. And so they, because they come in with this mindset of, you know, I got making all this money. And I think when I came out, the average salary for a rookie was about $130,000. Now it's about almost $500,000. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about a kid coming in into the league at 22, 23 years old. And you're paying him a rookie salary, just a regular rookie salary of almost $500,000. And now you're telling him he needs to do an internship program.
Right.
And so they have to, it's hard for them to separate now compared to what can be later. And they have to also deal with coaches saying you need to concentrate on football. You need to concentrate on football because the coaches' jobs are on the line too.
Right. And so because they are making so much money, there's more responsibility to, as well.
Much more responsibility.
Wow. Let's just take a call real quick. I see we have a caller on line one. I want to welcome you in. Is this Jack? Jack, welcome to the Eagles Nest. You're on with Troy Barnett.
Yeah, I see y'all had a general as a lady up there.
We had General Adams Ender on the line. Absolutely.
That was the worst thing the United States can do is elect females to join our military.
All right. We appreciate your call. So, again, Troy, we're back here talking about what really needs to happen as far as our players and athletes. And, you know, you have people coming from all different walks of life in an NFL locker room. You have so many people from different places when you're in corporate America. And you talked about not just being looked at as, you know, your typical jock, where all you bring to the table is your name or the fact that, you know, when they have the company football league, you know, you being the first pick, you know, on the team. So when you're able to compete on that same level, and you mentioned about your father and the military upbringing, how much has the discipline that you learned as a youngster, how much has that been able to help you cross over into the corporate world and what you have to do now and every day?
It's so important. And even though my father was in the military, I think my mother was more the disciplinarian. And she gave the marching orders and really instilled in us that discipline, that accountability, that being on time and being able to look past where you are now and start focusing on your future. And so we really focused, just took that drive from her and really started to apply that to every aspect of our life, whether it was on the playing field, in the classroom, or in any position that we've held. And I have three brothers, and we all kind of have that same mentality that, you know, we are the CEOs of our own life. Mm-hmm. And so we dictate, you know, how we're going to grow, where we're going to grow, and what we're going to do. And so you got to be invested in yourself. And once you're invested in yourself, others will also invest in you.
Well, and it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. It's hard to lead others if you can't lead yourself.
That's right.
You know, so in your position now with Under Armour and working in the field as well as far as HR, we know that the organization that you're a member of, the National Association of African American Human Resource Professionals, the Greater Baltimore Chapter, has a big event that's going to be taking place. So can you share with our listeners a little bit about that and how they can get involved?
Yes. So we'll be having our 20th anniversary celebration on Saturday, December 6th. It's going to be at the Forum Caterers. That's at 4210 Primrose Avenue in Baltimore. There's going to be a silent auction. We have, we're looking for a live band. We're going to have a lot of HR professionals from our local businesses and companies. We're going to have leaders there to be a part of that event. It's going to be a great event. This chapter's been around, as I said, really 21 years, but we're celebrating our 20th this year and it's really an organization I became a part of a couple of years ago, and I've learned so much from them, even just from a development standpoint. We have classes about, you know, what's new coming in HR. We have development classes, and we're able to collaborate and share what's happening in a lot of the businesses here in Baltimore. And it's going to be a really good event, and we're definitely asking for and looking for everyone to please come out to be a part of that. If you want to get a chance to talk with HR professionals and some of the big companies here in Baltimore, you want to look for some advice as to how you can kind of get into those particular companies, or just to get some advice on life transition, a lot of the big companies will be represented there. If you want to know more information about that, I encourage you to please go to our website. The website is NAAAHR Baltimore or NAAAHR Baltimore at .org, and we have all of our information out there. We have our gala flyer is out there, how you can become a sponsor, how you can become a vendor, how you can just buy a ticket and come be a part of such a great event. Again, that's going to be at NAAAHR Baltimore.org, and look forward to seeing everyone there.
Awesome. We look forward to everyone coming out. Now, Troy, to the young man or young lady that's listening right now that, you know, wants to play in college and feel like they can move on to professional sports, whether it be in basketball or football or baseball or whatever it may be, what would you say to that person as far as them having that dream but still being able to prepare for life after? Because it's amazing that, you know, when Derek Jeter, they talked about Derek Jeter being 40 years old, right? So he said when he was 40 years old in baseball, he was old. But then all of a sudden when he retired, he was 40 years old but young. You know, so he still had an entire life to live after sports. So what do you say to that person that is so tunnel vision, that they're focused on going after becoming a professional athlete and really have their blinders on and not really looking at what's going on around them, even from a high school perspective? Because you know how it is when you're involved in sports, that's your life. And a lot of connections I'm sure that you made that are carrying you on now may have even been outside of sports. So how do you juggle that?
You have to. It's not really that you have an option. You have to find a way to juggle athletics as well as your academics, and you got to make the right contacts now while you have such a visible platform. There are so many people that are willing to help, and they're looking for great athletes, but they're also looking for people who, more importantly, can come and bring that athlete mentality into their company. I recently was forwarded an article by one of my teammates, and the article said that athletes and musicians make the best teammates or best employees, really because of their training, their skills, the way they push themselves, accountability, drive. Those are all things that you can't teach. You should just have, you gotta have those things. And when you're able to kind of transition those skills into corporate America, you bring something to the table for that company that most people don't have. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I love about even just, you know, working where I work at is when you can come in and really bring something to the table and really have a drive and a passion for what you do, it's infectious. And so other people will gravitate to you and they'll want to be a part of whatever you're doing, and they're willing to support and to help in any way.
Wow. Well, real quick, we have about 2 minutes left, Troy. If someone is interested, we hear about Under Armour, and Under Armour has a huge corporate footprint in Baltimore, being based here in Baltimore. If someone is looking for a career opportunity with Under Armour, how do they go about finding out more information?
Go to our website. It's www.underarmour.jobs. That's UA.jobs. We have all of our career information out there. Also, if you go to our retail site, the underarmour.com site, you can also get to our site there, even on the, and to find out about our careers. It also have internship possibilities where we'll be launching or looking for our internships for to start in May. So we'll be looking for them in January. So please go to our website and apply to become an intern. And the way we do internship at Under Armour, we look for future leaders. So you don't just come in and just be a part of an internship program, but we're looking for individuals who are in college that once after college that we can bring you right into the company and to continue the growth that we're experiencing right now.
Awesome. Well, Troy, I thank you for coming in. I appreciate all that you're doing, everything that you're doing, not just with Under Armour, but with your ministry as well. I'm so excited that you took the time out of your busy schedule to come to the show today.
Here we go. It's my time to rise. It's my time to shine. It's my time to live. It's my time to fly. It's my time. I can see it.
So if you want,
I can feel it. Time has come now to reveal it. I've been waiting for a long time. Gotta do it. And won't let nothing hold me down. Gotta do it.
Be live on the air.
Cause I may not get another chance.